Chapter 9. Blighted. The Hound at the Gates of Hell. Lair of the Beast. Moving across the stars like a line of flame, the rebellion of the turncoat warmaster, Horus Lupercal, raged on. Inching ever closer to Terra and the throne of his father, the Emperor of Man. Step by step, consuming worlds, shattering the great imperial design. Horus, first among equals of the Primarchs, the Emperor's gene-forged sons, had embraced treason. And in his wake, nothing remained but ashen, silent battlefields, choked with the bodies of the dead, mute witness to the murder of loyalty and honor. This planet was such a place. Here, the traitors had sealed their revolt with an act of the greatest betrayal, and left behind the corpse of a world to mark the moment. It was a charnel house, a cooling ember thrown from the passing inferno. Nothing but death lingered. From the poisoned, churning skies came an iron raptor, moving fast and low across a ruined landscape that had formerly been a magnificent city of great spires and ornate minarets. The stormbird was the color of ghosts, and no icons or insignia marked the hull to give trace to its origins. Alone in the wilderness, it settled to the ground in a cloud of dust, a hatch in its flank dropping open. Three warriors disembarked. Each wore a suit of Mark VI Corvus pattern power armor, the most advanced build of war gear yet created for the Legionis Astartes. They carried bolt guns and power swords, but went without helmets, faces bare to the biting winds. And like their ship, they bore no markings. Sigils of echelon and honor, of legion and fealty, were absent. All save a stylized eye etched into the metal and ceramite. The mark of Malkador the Sigilite, the regent of Terra, and adjutant to the Emperor.
"Ready your weapons, brothers," said Garrow. "Be watchful."
He took in the ruined vista, his gaze looking to the far horizon of the battleground.
"Just one burned world among many," he thought,
remembering his first sight of such destruction wrought by the Warmaster's hand. It seemed like a long time ago. Much had taken place since then. Prospero, Kalth, Cygnus Prime, a litany of worlds engulfed in the fires. At Garrow's side, Rubio knelt and gathered up a handful of earth, sifting it through the fingers of his gauntlet. About the Codicia's head, a subtle halo of delicate, crystalline circuitry gave off a faint blue glow. It had been more than a year since his recruitment to Malkador's duty, and he had yet to make his peace with his changed status. Rubio closed his eyes, and a shudder ran through him, as he allowed his psionic senses to extend and take the measure of the ruins all around them. The invisible traces of human souls littered the landscape, shades of them left in the ethereal, like burn shadows after a nuclear detonation.
"This place," he began, "there is torment, and so much sorrow." "We know full well what happened here."
The third warrior bore the aspect of a veteran, the scars of countless conflicts upon a chiseled, granite-hard face.
"You have no need to rake the ashes and stir the memories of the dead."
Garrow had offered Mesa Varan a role as one of Malkador's operatives after his refusal to follow his kinsman to Horus's banner, but in truth, the duty sat poorly with him. Quick to anger, like all the world-eaters, he longed to be out in the thick of the war, facing his former battle brothers. He lacked the cool detachment of the Death Guard or the stoicism of the Ultramarine.
"Why have you brought us here, Garrow? What reason could there possibly be for us to visit these blighted wastes?"
"Because the Sigilite commands it."
"Does he?"
Varan scowled.
"And with ease, I do not doubt. The halls of the Imperial Palace are a long way from where we stand, brother. A long way from the memory of the atrocities committed in this place."
The Psyker gave a slow nod of agreement.
"All I sense here is death. Would Lord Malkador have us bring him skulls and bones?"
Garrow took a deep breath and gestured around. "The scent. Do you smell it? An odor in the air. Dry and acrid.
Human ash. The remains of countless corpses, reduced to powder, cast to the winds.
It is fitting that we set foot on this world. Where this war began, there will be an ending. Of sorts." Varan eyed him suspiciously.
"What do you mean? these tasks we completed for the Sigillite, the conscripts we have gathered.
Garrow silenced him with a raised hand. I will tell you what Lord Malkador told me in the Somnus Citadel on Luna. This will be the last.
Neither Varan nor Rubio raised their voices to question him, both legionaries reflecting on his words. This ruined world would mark the end of their quest in the Sigillite's name, and yet all three warriors knew in their marrow that their greater purpose was still yet to be fulfilled.
Far across the shattered city, buildings flattened by orbital strikes lay like great fallen trees. Those few that remained partly intact reached up, broken skeletal fingers clawing at an overcast sky. Down in the rubble-choked streets, the voice of the wind was the moan of a dying animal, but upon the crumbling ramparts it was a ceaseless torrent of dust and grit. From the haze came a twitching, feral figure, clad in blackened, war-damaged armor, moving across the rooftops to stand at the very edge of a broken parapet. He opened his arms wide to embrace the windstorm, the ragged, torn cloak at his back, snapping like unfurling wings.
"Shall I die again?"
His voice was a broken, cracked thing, directed at the sky.
"Shall I step forwards into the embrace of gravity, fall and be dashed upon the broken stones far below? Shall I try to die again?"
He gave a cold, brittle chuckle.
"If only it were so simple. If only I could."
He paused, leaning out, almost as if he were daring fate to claim him.
"You cannot take me!"
He bellowed the words, a slow burn of mad anger rising within.
"You do not know me. You do not know my name. I am become Cerberus, the wolfhound at the gateway to hell. I am untouched. Do you hear me?"
He filled his augmented lungs and roared.
"Do you hear?"
The chainsword at his side was as ruined as the rest of his war gear, as broken as his mind, and yet, like those tools, it too could still function. Could still kill. At the push of a power stud, the ravaged blade stuttered into life. The one who named himself Cerberus kept speaking, his torrent of words like a hushed litany, like a madman's confession.
"This destruction will never end. I have seen into the darkest heart of it. I tasted blood on the blade at the birth. I will see it rage on and on and on, for the future will only be war. I see the city as it was and as it is, a nest of traitors spun into treachery by the songs they sang in the night. I see the light of madness in my own eyes. I do not know the face beneath my helm. I see the dead and the dead and the dead. Palaces of corrupted stone, steel rusted by hate. The killers and the killed, crying out, spreading their filth and their poison. I see the mark of the three. I know what it means. If nothing else, I know that."
His eyes searched the gloom below, desperate for prey.
"I am Cerberus. Yes, I have been rejected by death itself. The piece of the grave will only be mine when the scales are balanced. I am the last loyal man under a galaxy of traitor stars. The undying among the dead."
Then the warrior saw his foe, and he leapt into the air.
"And I come for you."
Those who called this world home had not been spared the fate of their planet. Tides of lance fire, kinetic kill rods, and the vicious lash of bioweapon bombardments took their toll. Life was ripped from their flesh, savagely torn away, and yet, even among the ashes of their dead kindred, some pitiful remnants remained. They could not be called human, not any more. The force that animated them was life, but of a kind born of horror and pestilence. Bodies saved from instant death by happenstance or blind luck, these were the ones who had died slowly in the aftermath, vomiting up black tainted blood, choking on their own fouled fluids. These were the unlucky ones, denied the mercy of the quicker kills, their flesh intact enough to become host to colonies of virulent disease. Whatever remained of who they once were had gone. Now they were only vectors for the plague to spread itself, mindless meat things stumbling in the ruins. Cerberus hated them. He loathed them with a furious, insane passion that had no end. He hated them as he hated himself. For, like the risen dead, he had perished and yet lived, but untouched by their infection. The unliving fought him, their groaning howls sounding through the mist. But the warrior ripped through their lines like a hurricane, annihilating everything that moved. Death had rejected him, thrown him back, and so he would kill until it embraced him once more.
"I am the storm's blade," he screamed at them. "I am justice. I am defiance and the oath-keeper."
And in only moments, all of the creatures were torn apart, and silence fell.
"I am alone,"
he panted, even as a part of him was longing for the next fight. Here, at the edge of the dead city, a great plain of blasted land lay churned and broken. Defense bunkers were cracked open like looted tombs, trenches filled with floods of dried, blood-laced mud. Garrow, Varan, and Rubio marched past the corruption and destruction into the teeth of the constant, mournful gale.
"Those winds," muttered Rubio. "The sound chills the marrow."
They navigated around deep impact craters, where lakes of toxic water gathered. The rusted, burned-out shells of landspeeders and assault tanks lay across the silent battlefield. Here and there, the grimy skeletons of soldiers spared the mercy of death by vaporization. Garrow's gaze crossed the myriad bodies of the dead. No sane man could look upon this place and not think it a vision of hell.
"Hell," Varan snorted. "There is no such thing. It's a figment of old idolatry, nothing more. We have no need for a place of horrors beyond death. Horus makes it for us, here, in the real."
The battle captain did not respond. A glitter of something golden caught his eye, in the lee of an overturned Rhino-class armored transport. It reflected the weak, watery daylight. Garrow approached and found the remains of a man, scraps of a grey-green uniform clinging to blackened bones. He bent down to take a closer look. Rubio approached him.
"What is it?"
Garrow leaned in, and with a delicacy that belied the bulk of his armored hand, he plucked a smoke-dirtied icon from the cracked fingers of the corpse. It was a simple chain made of low-purity metal, and hanging from it, a two-headed aquila of the Imperium, rendered in gold. It seemed tiny, lying there in the palm of his ceramite gauntlet.
"The uniform. This one was a soldier in the Imperial Auxilia. A rifleman," noted the Cordisier.
Garrow knew full well what the icon represented. Outwardly, an ordinary trinket. The Aquila symbol was a touchstone for those who followed a secret faction within the secular Imperium. Those who carried such a thing were followers of the Lectitio Divinitatis, they who believed that the Emperor of Mankind was worthy of godhood. These beliefs hid in shadow. They had no churches, no agency but those who believed. The Emperor was the most powerful human being who had ever lived, an immortal psychic of matchless power, and he had dismantled every religion in human history in favor of his great empire. It was said that the Emperor himself did not wish to be worshipped as a living deity, but his deeds had taken that choice away from him. His true divinity was bestowed by those who had faith in his majesty. Before the Civil War, before the treachery, Garrow had held to the secular dominions of imperial truth. But since then, the things he had seen, the horrors and the miracles, he had been challenged, and along his path the warrior had found a new, secret faith.
"The Emperor protects," he whispered.
A faint hum of power murmured through Rubio's psychic hood as he examined the dead man.
"Those words you speak. As the rifleman perished, they were his last thoughts. How could you know that?"
Garrow frowned and let the icon fall from his fingers, and moved away.
"It does not matter." "Kinsman, over here. You should see this."
Varan was calling them from where he stood at the edge of a wide, low blast crater. And, as Garrow and the Psyker drew close, both legionaries saw that the earth about the hollow had been fused into dull, glassy sheets by some tremendous discharge of heat. Rubio glanced at Garrow.
"A fusion blast, perhaps?"
The other warrior gave a curt nod. Varan held a twisted curve of blackened metal in his grip, the fragment trailing broken cables and bunches of fibres that resembled muscle. His face was set in an expression that was equally sorrowful and angered.
Another relic of the dead to lay at the bastard Warmaster's feet.
Garrow's breath caught in his throat. The fragment was a piece of power armour, a pauldron warped by thermal shock. The original colours of the cracked ceramite sheath were barely discernible, marbled white with dark emerald detail. But it was the scarred, pitted symbol upon the armour piece that, for a moment, robbed Garrow of his voice. There, staring back at him, was the device of a white skull on a black sun. The old sigil of the Death Guard Legion. He looked away, and, with mounting dread, saw what at first he had thought to be more drifts of blasted rubble were actually the scattered remains of legionary war gear, left to rust and decay. Garrow's fingers tightened into fists, and he felt the mirror of Varan's cold fury rise in him.
I know where we stand, World Eater. This place, this graveyard, this is where my battle brothers perished at Horus Lupercal's command. Here they died when Mortarion, my own Primarch, gave them up.
He swallowed a surge of powerful sorrow.
You said we should not stir the ashes of the dead, Varan. You are mistaken. We need to hear them. We must listen to the tales of their deaths. And then, on the day the Turncoat Warmaster is given his due, we will be their voices.
The Codicia gave a curt nod, the soft glow of his psychic hood framing his face.
I hear them, even now, at the edge of my senses, like the rush of the wind.
Rubio did not complete his thought. Instead, he suddenly turned in place, bringing up his bolter to the ready, aiming into the gloom. Garrow and Varan did the same, ready to face whatever danger the Psyker had intuited. They came out of the smoke haze slowly and carefully, making every effort to show no fear, and failing with it. What weapons they had were meagre and barely enough to scratch the armour of the legionaries. There were fewer than 20 of them, a haggard and dispirited flock. Young and old, male and female, their bodies malnourished and their faces hollowed with hunger and fatigue. Varan was incredulous.
Survivors, here, and common men at that. It's not possible. It would seem otherwise, said Rubio. If they had made it to a refuge, waited until the bio-agents dissipated.
He trailed off, examining their faces.
Do not underestimate the will to live, added Garrow.
You need not be a legionary to possess that trait.
He turned to address the survivors.
Lower your weapons in the presence of the Emperor's Space Marines, or answer for it.
A mutter of surprise passed through the group. An older man, in a torn military jumpsuit, stepped forwards and gestured for the others to do as Garrow had commanded. Doffing his forage cap, he took a few paces closer.
Space Marines, you say? Of what legion are you, Lord? Your colours are unfamiliar.
His accent had the distinctive tones of a Cambric-born, a people of hardy stock from a system in the Segmentum Solar.
You dare to question us, Varan hissed. We carry the mark of the Sigilite.
All you need know is that we serve the Emperor of Mankind, Garrow told him.
Not Horus Lupercal?
The Cambrican asked the question with raw fear in his eyes. Garrow gave him a pitiless glare.
The Oathbreaker Horus and all those who side with him have been declared excommunicate traitoris by the Council of Terra.
Now you will answer my questions. Who are you, and how did you survive the virus bombs?
The old man told them his name was Arcudi. He had been a deck captain in the motive crew aboard a Titan, Arc Bellus, but the war machine had been crippled and beheaded early in the battle with the traitors. Arcudi explained how he and some of his men escaped into the city even as the bombardment began. They took shelter in a series of underground transit tunnels, moving to the deepest levels as the bombs fell. By sheer blind luck, they had become sealed in down there, buried under tons of rockcrete and stone. Many had perished as they worked to dig themselves out, and in the months that passed, the battle above their heads burned itself out. The turncoats had moved on.
We have been crossing the great span of the city on foot, but the passage has taken a long time, he went on. We move only at the speed of our slowest. We are searching for a way to flee this dead world. A ship, if such a thing can be found intact. But our morale and our strength runs thin, my lord. We endured such hardships, such horrors.
Varen's lip curled.
We cannot help you. We have a mission here. Your circumstances are not part of it.
You would leave them to die,
snapped Rubio, dismayed by the world-eater's callous words. Arcudi held out his hands in entreaty.
Please help us. If you truly are loyal to Terra, I have always believed the Emperor protects.
Tears filled his rheumy eyes.
The Emperor protects.
What did you say?
Garrow strode over to the old soldier, and he stiffened in fear. Arcudi did not resist as the warrior took his arm and pulled back the ragged, torn sleeve of his tunic. There, about the soldier's wrist, was a gold chain with an icon of an aquila. Garrow gently released his grip.
The Emperor protects.
He does indeed.
And here and now, we three are the instruments of his will. You will come with us.
Varen's craggy face creased in a frown.
This is a mistake. We are not here to rescue a litter of wounded strays.
Garrow gave the other warrior a hard look.
You do not know the letter of Malkador's orders for this mission. Or do you believe you would be more suited to direct this duty than I?
Varen said nothing, and at length shook his head. Still, his soured expression spoke volumes. On some level, Garrow knew the other legionary was correct, but it was clear that Arcudi and many of his group were also followers of the Lectitio Divinitatis. And whatever duty the battle captain had to the Sigillite, his faith in the Emperor transcended it. Arcudi saw something in his eyes and spoke to him in careful, conspiratorial tones.
He sent you. I prayed, and he sent you. The moment we saw daylight again, I knew we would be delivered. If only we could escape the beast.
Beast.
Varen caught the scent of terror around the word and eyed the old man.
Explain yourself, deck captain,
Garrow prompted. A new fear, strong and potent, shimmered in the soldier's eyes, and he threw a worried glance over his shoulder.
There is a revenant that prowls the ruins of the city, lords. A terrible, monstrous thing. It has been stalking us. I have seen it. A hulking form, wreathed in a tattered cloak, stinking of blood and death. It has already killed many of us, returning again and again to prey upon our numbers. I fear it will end us all before we can find safety.
Arcudi's terror lingered in the air like the dust in the wind, and something in his description sounded a cold, steady clarion in Garrow's mind. When he spoke again, he spoke to all.
This revenant! If it is beyond you to defeat it, then we will do so in your stead. We will not wait for an attack to come.
He glanced towards Varen and Rubio.
Brothers, ready yourselves. We will take the fight to this beast. We will battle it on our terms.
Every man who has tried has perished,
Arcudi warned.
Garrow nodded. We are not men. We are legionaries.
He pointed back towards the ruins.
Show us where to find this thing.
In the center of the city, a building that had once defied the beauty of the heavens now lay collapsed in upon itself. A basilica of stately and imposing character, now reduced to a hill of dust-caked rubble and broken glassaic. Inside the fallen structure, there were still cavernous spaces, slope-shouldered voids where support columns of marble had fractured but not fallen. Successive damage wrought by fires and the sluice of acidic rains made the bombed-out building a dangerous place. Any mistake of footing could bring down a precariously supported wall or swallow a gap in a heartbeat. And yet, the warrior returned to the basilica time and again, drawn back here by a compulsion he could neither understand nor deny. Cerberus picked his way across the rubble, in the gloom and the damp air, returning to the place of his rebirth. A silent, ruined figure in scarred armor waited there, slumped against the remains of a broken lectern.
I am here once more, brother. Cerberus is here. Will you speak to me on this day?
There was no reply. There was no sound but the drip of water on stone. It was here that he had died. Here that he had reawakened, buried beneath the debris in the stone. It was here in this memorial to wanton destruction that he had dug himself out, driven by a single-mindedness that bordered on lunacy.
If you will not speak to me, brother, I will talk to you. I will tell you the tale again, and take the pain. Do you remember it? I know you do. How many times must I ask you to share the moment with me? I share my own thoughts, and there are voids, dark places, broken shards of memory, jagged and harsh.
He gave a low moan of pain. All attempt at recollection brought agony unlike any other. Razors clawing across the surface of his mind. Fire enveloping his soul. And yet he still tried to grasp it. As Cerberus struggled to pull the memories out of his tortured thoughts, the phantom traces of gunfire, of screams, rose with them. He experienced anew the clash of sword on sword, the shriek of falling bombs.
I will see you and I in these halls, the traitors of the lectern, the hate in them, the ruinous powers, the sword, this sword in my hand. Stop! Stop! You must not! Stay your hand!
He collapsed to his knees, feeling the misery of those moments anew in a flash of brutal, terrible empathy.
Do not do this!
And yet, for all the agony he endured, his fractured mind could not bring him the understanding he so desperately wanted. No measure of truth made itself clear to him. The precious, ephemeral knowledge of himself remained forever out of reach. This death that was no death had done that to him. The betrayal and the fire, the blades and the bombs, the wounds they gave him bled out his spirit into the stones. Lost and forgotten, he lived through that moment once more.
Betrayal. Madness and betrayal.
Each word was agony for him.
The Red God and darkness. Darkness.
He collapsed, fighting to breathe like a drowning man pulled from a lake. In that death, the warrior had been broken inside. Some vital part of the man he was had been torn open. The fragments of him spilling out into the dust. Ruined and burned, time held him in its cradle as the war passed about him. The line of flame moved on, and he was left behind, discarded by the turncoats and the ashen wastes.
Brother, kinsman, each time the death cuts closer, but still I am rejected. You know why. Will you not tell me?
Hand over hand, he dragged himself across the rubble.
Death took you. Why not me? Why not me?
With a sudden burst of furious energy, he launched himself across the broken stones to where the other figure lay slumped upon the lectern.
Speak to me!
But no answer would ever come. The warrior's brother lay dead and mouldering, as he had every day since the ignition of the rebellion. His kinsman's neck ended in a bloody stump, his severed head lying in his lap. Blackened crusts of dried fluid surrounded the pale, bloodless lips. Sightless eyes set in a ruined face, tended by flies and slow rot, stared out at nothing.
I am sorry,
he whispered.
I wish I could remember your name, brother. Please forgive me.
The warrior looked down at his hands. His body seemed disconnected from his thoughts, as if they belonged to some other being. And in that instant, he felt the briefest touch of lucidity.
What has been done to me? Who?
A rattle of stones sounded across the broken chamber as rocks were dislodged by the shifting of weight. The warrior fell silent, sensing movement somewhere above, and the moment was gone.
Who dares?
He growled, rising to his feet, drawing his battered chainsword and finding the answer to his own question.
Intruders.
Night had fallen across the shattered cityscape, and the broken spires and toppled towers became a nest of shadows and darkened spaces. Acres of windowless voids glared out like black, predatory eyes, and the wind never ceased. Garrow led the others on their approach, but at distance the old soldier skidded to a halt and refused to go any closer.
This is the place. The beast is in there. Are you certain?
asked Varen. Arcudi nodded nervously as Rubio studied the fallen structure.
It appears to be the remains of an official building.
I saw 10 men enter with intent to kill the beast, said the old man. I heard them dying only seconds later. This is where the killer hides. On some nights, the screams of torment it makes are carried to us on the wind.
Garrow's hand went to the hilt of Libertas.
Return to the rest of your group, he ordered. Varen, go with him.
What?
The World Eater glared at him, affronted.
You put me aside.
The two legionaries locked gazes, and Garrow lowered his voice.
I give you a command, brother. Remain here. Watch Arcudi and his people. Be on the alert.
Varen's reply, when it came, was cold and sullen.
As you wish.
Garrow watched him go, then turned to Rubio.
What do you see?
The Psyker studied the tumble-down remnants of the building, peering into the stone, measuring the telepathic resonance of the air around them. His face was lit by the glow of his hood's crystalline mechanism.
I am uncertain, he admitted. Emotion clouds this place like smoke. It is difficult to filter out the noise. So many died here. So many voices.
I only need you to find one.
Rubio nodded and closed his eyes, the blue aura of the Psi Matrix casting strange, jumping shadows. Garrow felt the air tingle with a metallic tang, the trace of psionic spore, a tiny measure of the immaterium crossing into the real world. Garrow watched Rubio work his art, the Psyker's hands moving as if feeling in the dark for something unseen. The talents of espers, psychics, and warpseers had always seemed strange and alien to him, even in the days when he had fought as a battle captain in the Great Crusade. The Sigillite had given Garrow leave to employ Rubio's prohibited skills as he saw fit, with no word of censure. What that meant for the future, Garrow could only guess at.
Something. Someone is here with us, said Rubio, breaking the silence. But the shadow of the mind is unusual. In the past I have read those recently dead and seen the echoes of who they were, like the rifleman. This is the same, but it is a mind that yet lives, almost as if his thoughts are caught between life and death.
We shall find him then, and learn to which extreme he lies. Come with me.
But Rubio held out a hand and halted Garrow before he could enter the ruins.
And what will you tell this tortured soul when we find him? The Emperor protects.
If you have something to say to me, brother, I would hear it, Garrow said sharply.
The Psyker's hand dropped away, but he held the former Death Guard's steady gaze.
Varen was correct. Arcudi and the survivors are not our concern. Our duty is our sole focus. I learned that hard lesson when you recruited me on Kalth.
I give the orders. Lord Malkador chose me as his Agentia Primus.
Aye, he did, agreed Rubio. But this is not the first time I have heard you say those words, Garrow. The Emperor protects. They have more meaning than you will admit to. And those Aquila icons, too. They are more than mere trinkets.
Garrow said nothing, watching the younger legionary carefully. Was Rubio probing his surface thoughts even as he spoke? How would he react to learn that Nathaniel Garrow, hero of the Eisenstein, chosen of the Sigillite, dallied with belief in a deity? The Psyker answered the question.
It matters little to me what you may hide, Garrow. We each have our demons and our secrets. But be sure that you do not allow your agenda to come into conflict with our sworn oath.
That will never come to pass, he insisted.
Rubio drew his weapons and pointed with his battle sword.
Lead the way, then.